WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Linguist Jeffrey Nunberg often talks with us about the history and meaning of words, but today he's going to tell us about a new word that he made up.
It's been a long time since I heard anybody refer to cigarettes as coffin nails. But I see where a clever California entrepreneur has been doing a brisk business in a novelty brand called Death Cigarettes, with a package that shows a skull and the Surgeon General's warning in extra big letters. There seems to be no name for this when you call something by a word that makes it sound bad. What we want is the opposite of euphemism, which is formed from the Greek roots meaning good speech. That would be cacophonism, but I don't see any record that the word's ever been used. Well, it's got to start somewhere. Of course, euphemism is much more common than cacophonism. Human nature being what it is, we feel more need to put a nice face on things than an ugly one. Certain concepts seem to call up euphemisms in every language and every age. The Anglo-Saxons referred to death as the Elorsith, or journey elsewhere, pretty much like our passing away. But euphemism only flowers fully amongst the dense repressions of modern civilization. Ordinary life is so suffused with euphemism that we sometimes don't even recognize it unless we get an alien point of view. I know a Scandinavian who was visiting America and went into a store to buy some toilet paper. He brought a roll over to the clerk and said, "I don't understand. This says facial quality, but I want rectal quality." It's these same repressions that beget cacophonisms. The more daintily people trip around a topic, the more temptation there is to stick it to them. When middle-class people first began to use marijuana in the 1960s, they referred to it with words like grass and pot as part of an earnest effort to distinguish it from hard drugs like heroin. But as the drug culture became more assertive, people began to call marijuana by the old name dope, which conjured up all of the 1930s reefer madness stereotypes about narcotics. It set up a nice us-them distinction. After all, middle-aged people with pretensions to hipness could don flowered shirts and bell-bottom trousers. But they couldn't very well refer to marijuana as dope with the assurance that everybody else would understand that they were being ironic. This sort of thing often happens at a certain stage in the development of a social movement. It's going on now in the gay community, where some activists have gone back to the old epithets. There's a group called the Radical Fairies, and the San Francisco lesbian motorcyclist who call themselves Dykes on Bikes. But most of the controversy surrounds a revival of the word queer. The group called Queer Nation was founded a while ago to combat gay bashing with a motto, "We're here, we're queer, get used to it." The usage disturbs a lot of older members of the community who have fought for a long time to establish gay as a standard term. For them, words like queer and fairy are still tainted with the memories of persecution. But that's the point of cacophonisms. They throw stereotypes back in people's faces. Curiously, cacophonisms often have the same fate as euphemisms. They can lose their connotations and become just ordinary names for things. Head shrinker was introduced as a cacophonism for psychotherapist. But the shortened form shrink doesn't have disparaging overtones, maybe because people don't have to be diffident or defensive about being in therapy nowadays. And most of the people who call the TV the tube have forgotten that the expression originated as boob tube. That expression lost its ironic tinge once Knot's Landing became intellectually respectable. You'd like to think that attitudes about sexual preference would change in the same way, so that queer would have no more shock value than lefty.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist at Stanford University and the Institute for Research on Learning in Palo Alto, California.